This is the 2,500 setback, oil and gas drilling setback. It's previously known as Ballard Issue 97. So now it's known as 112. So kind of burn that in your brain and let, you know, so you can follow that legislation through the process. So, Bob, I'll let you start on that.
So this is the 2,500-foot setback. Everybody, all of the candidates are against it, including Jerry Polis, who has in the past run initiatives for 2,000-foot setback. We don't know exactly where he stands right now or what he thinks the proper number is, but 2,500 setback would devastate the oil and gas industry. I'm an unapologetic supporter of fossil fuels. I represent 15,000 oil wells, three big coal mines. It's the heart of the economy of the district I represent. So, number one, it's my job as a representative to not to fight any issue that would put my constituents out of jobs and out of business. Secondly, I think the oil and gas business is pretty safe the way it is. We have the best regulations in the nation. And despite a few terrible, tragic accidents, we have the best regulated and the safest oil and gas industry in the country. Very important, it supports our schools, it supports the severance taxes, come back to us in the form of grants. There's so many advantages, property taxes, severance taxes, jobs. So I think it's totally unnecessary. We have 500-foot setback now, and we have a local community designee who interacts with the oil and gas community, and the community can take a position on every new drilling permit if they so choose. I think we have the right regulations in place. I think this is an attempt to put oil and gas out of business.
Okay. Well, it's interesting that you say that every candidate is opposed to this, because I am a candidate and I am not opposed to
it. I mean at the state level. I'm sorry.
I believe that this is a health and safety measure. This will allow us to keep our people safe. It will allow us to keep our people healthy. They will not have asthma. They will not have cancer that's associated with living right next to a well. Anybody who's spent enough time next to a well or a rig will tell you that it is not a good place to live. Currently, 500 feet from a house is correct. 350 feet from a playground. That is a little bit too close for our kids. I'm sorry, I just can't allow our kids to go there and do that. I think that 2,500 feet might be a little bit extreme. I would have preferred to have seen it at 1,500 feet. But we need to look at this not as a jobs killer. We need to look at it as a health and safety measure. The oil and gas industry wants you to think that if this goes through, you will lose all future drilling. That's not true. No company will actually end up leaving the state and lose profits. As Representative Rankin said before, we have some of the largest fossil fuels in the state, in the Pinyon Basin. The companies aren't going to leave and say, well, we just won't drill there anymore because 250 or 2,500 feet is too close. They're going to still drill there, and horizontal drilling allows us the ability to put a well 2,500 feet from a house and still drill under to that well and get that oil and natural gas that we have. I think that this is the proper measure for us right now. I would have liked to have seen the state of Colorado go to 1,250 feet when they first entered this in 1950. If we continue on the way we are right now, we might as well want, explode another nuclear bomb at Arulison and see how much more natural gas we can. So why don't we allow ourselves to go through health and safety measures to protect our people and protect our children? That's where I would stand on it.
There have been extensive studies on health and safety around oil wells. Those studies, sanctioned by the EPA and our own department, do not support your position.
That are paid for by the oil and gas industries?
Absolutely not.
Okay, let's do this. Let's open up on this issue. I'm going to open the floor to questions right now. So who would like to ask a question on this issue? Go ahead.
I'm just curious if either of the participants here have any idea how much it cost per foot for an oil and gas company to drill horizontally. People, they keep talking about how we're going to decimate the industry, and I'd like to see some more real numbers. I'd like to see, I'm also, side issue, I'm interested in finding out if any of these oil and gas companies also are diversifying into renewables as well, because, you know, the whole concept here is most people that have a lot of education, scientific education in this field, connection between fossil fuel burning and so forth, suggests that we need to address this. So it's a transition thing. I hear both sides of this as well, because if you look at the budget, anybody's local budget, particularly in Weld and Garfield County, you know, there is a positive economic impact in terms of just plain numbers that the oil and gas industry produces, but there's also the undocumented costs of the health and the other pieces. So I think, you know, I'd like to see a better discussion as to the whole picture here. I also don't think, I think both sides are exaggerating the impacts. And I think that there are ways that you can document the actual revenue in spots where oil and gas companies may own land adjacent that would more likely produce a similar type of return, type of production. You can actually quantify and understand what the loss would be, what the cost would be, what the loss would be by making a compromise, going back another 1,000 feet and so forth. I have a couple of other plans, but I'll save those for my own discussion at some point.
Well, your question is, so?
Question is, are you familiar with the cost per foot for an oil and gas company to drill horizontally to get to pads so that they could meet a buffer?
Well, it's based on a misconception. You're suggesting that if you back off 2,500 feet, you can drill under, and that's true, except when you back off, you're within 1,000 feet of another structure. The analysis is not based on the ability to drill horizontally. It's based on the analysis to drill anywhere. I mean, you know, 2,500 feet from any structure in Colorado is what the analysis is based on. And it will, in fact, put the industry out of business because these people are not going to invest resources in that kind of uncertainty, that kind of difficulty.
So I do not have those numbers with you. I'm happy to research them if they are available. I don't know. It would be very interesting if a company actually put out how much it costs to horizontally drill versus vertically drill. I can't see them actually doing that, but if I can find them, I will be happy to get them to you. Second, horizontal drilling does allow us to get the natural resources that we need. Garfield County is one of the top, I believe, one of the top 8 counties in the state in terms of oil and natural gas production. We're not going to lose any of that by putting this in. The idea that if you put in the 2,500 feet buffer, that we lose our ability to drill is a misconception right from the start that the oil and natural gas companies want people to believe. What we need to do is look at this as a health and safety measure and make sure that our children and our people are healthy and happy and able to live through their lives. And that will also lower costs of health insurance, which is a huge issue on the Western Slope.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Question for you. So I understand your idea about the initial well drilling setback at 2,500 and doing diagonal. A lot of our wells are in Weld County that are existing.
Yes.
And being in the, having been in the oil industry, a well has so much life time. At some point, you have to re-stimulate the well. And so those wells that are existing will be affected by the 2,500 setback. Secondly, you're always talking about the health and welfare. And you're talking about these people who have asthma. They choose to, you know, I don't know where that comes from. Maybe
I'm not just talking about those people. I'm talking about you
as
well.
But I do believe that the regulations are set mm-hmm. for environmental. They they're so heavily regulated out here that, you know, to move into an area where it might affect you a lot, that's an interesting, that's a whole other argument.
So first, this will only affect, this initiative will only affect new wells, new drilling.
I don't think so. That's not what we've been told.
It is only for new drilling. It does not, in if you read the initiative, it does not involve any existing wells.
I'd like to hear Mr. Rankin's response to that.
Yeah, that's an open question. If you re-stimulate a well, that's essentially drilling a new well. In fact, sometimes you might go in and do more horizontal drilling from the same pad and refrack that well. So
but
that
the,
is, you know,
the
a
actual
common occurrence.
The terms of the initiative do not include that.
They do not exclude it. And the other point I want to make is that most well configurations now are up to 25 wells drilled from the same pad, and they are horizontal. Almost all of the wells these days are horizontally drilled. You cannot find a place to drill from if you have a 2,500-foot setback. It's just a fact.
No, I disagree. And
well,
talking
fine.
To people,
you disagree. You oppose. You're for this initiative, which.
Talking to people
says we'd close down the business. That's fine.
It's no company is going to leave this state and lose profits. That's just.
I absolutely disagree with that. I know the CEOs. I've talked to them. I'm telling you, this initiative will close down almost all 80 to 90% of the oil and gas in the state.
So you can look everybody in this room in the eye and tell me and tell them that the oil and natural gas industry will leave Colorado.
Your position will cause the oil and gas industry to decline by somewhere between 60 and 80%.
But you just said they would leave.
Well, that means they leave. I mean, you know, you got to have a lot of the big companies will leave. We'll have a few small players who still stick around and try to fight the odds. But all the big players will leave.
I disagree. No company would leave.
I disagree.
No company would leave the Pinyon Basin when they have the ability to extract more.
I think it's clear that you're on record supporting this initiative. That's fine. Let's move on.
Yes, ma'am. You go ahead.
I would just like to make a comment as to the health issues there. Mm-hmm. I grew up about 30 miles east of Houston, in a small town where Humble Oil, this is years ago, was the biggest thing around. We had more oil derricks than we had trees. I grew up in a family of six. I'm healthy as I can be. We're all still alive. I went to school there. The whole community, we don't have any higher rates of any sort of asthma or cancer or any other illness than anybody else in this country. So those suppositions about it being bad for your health, I would really love to see the statistics for where you got your information, because I personally have experienced this totally contrary to that.
Well, and I first of all, congratulations for going through that. The CDC has done these studies. The CDC has proven that if you live near an oil rig that close, you will, or you can have a higher rate.
That is untrue.
Okay, so let's move on.
Actually, saying I'm lying.
Dale, I'd like for you to produce the study.
I just wanted to mention, Bob, that I know a number of people that I've talked to that have contaminated water in Western Garfield County. Western Garfield. So, to me, yes, it's a health issue.
The EPA published a study a couple of years ago that said there has never been a case of fracking. Now, some oil casings have been disturbed and caused water pollution. But in terms of the often quoted fracking pollutes water, totally untrue, documented nationally by the EPA. So I challenge you to come up with these studies. I mean, everybody says, oh, well, let's see the study. I'd like to read it.
Okay. I have a question over here, Matthew.
Representative Rankin. I heard you earlier talking about Sandra Lopez, who was just released out of Carbondale. Where
good news.
Sure. What's your stance on sanctuary cities specifically? Do you support them, yes or no?
No.
But you do support Sandra?
Well, I think there are a lot of things broken in our immigration system.
Do you support
DACA? I think, you know, having a mother of U.S. citizens in sanctuary, that's all.
So why is she okay with sanctuary cities or not people?
Well, I think that ought to be obvious. Sanctuary cities protect criminal behavior.
They do?
Yes. They refuse to release people who have been incarcerated for crimes to ICE. I mean, big difference. I mean, if you can't see that difference, I mean, wow. That's the our immigration system comes in a lot of different flavors, has a lot of different impact on a lot of different people. And
yeah,
we need
absolutely.
To fix it. We need to fix it.
But
giving sanctuary to criminals?
So do you think they're all criminals, or is Sandra a criminal too?
I never said that. I never even implied it. Why would you even suggest
You just
that?
Said giving sanctuary to criminals.
I'm talking about sanctuary cities.
So the definition of a sanctuary city is one where the federal government doesn't come in and deputize your local law enforcement officers. So you believe that the federal government can come in and deputize your local law enforcement officers. And I'm on the record in a Post-Independent article that I wrote about the definition of sanctuary cities.
I guess I don't understand your definition, and maybe I'll read your article.
Okay, well, thanks, man. Well, let's get back to the oil and gas issue. I want to make sure we questions about the oil and gas before we move on to some of the other issues here. John?
It turns out that I think we all, do we agree that oil and gas is a finite resource that will eventually pass by the major?
Okay. I believe so.
All right.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Now, there are other concerns with oil and gas, regardless of whether you agree or disagree with the health concerns. One of the biggest concerns I have is the oil and gas industry uses a tremendous amount of water to do what they do. And then that water is no longer water. It's not renewable anymore. It's not something we can reclaim. They pump it back into the ground, and it's absolutely toxic. I'm curious as to if you support oil and natural gas, which I see your position because they do provide a great deal of income for the state and jobs and so forth. What's your position in terms of phasing that out and moving towards renewables as we move into the rest of this century?
I'll let you go first on this one.
Oh, I think it will happen. The question is,
what would you do?
The question is, has to do with, you know, actually the economics and the market and the jobs and how fast that happens. Should we prematurely shut down plants, coal-burning plants? I suspect many of you think so. But, you know, the unused capital resource of a coal plant that's prematurely closed down is passed along to consumers. So consumers ultimately pay when we subsidize the transition or when we try to accelerate it. So I think those factors have to be taken into account. We'll eventually not be burning fossil fuels I think we'll always have some use for backup or, you know, those kinds of things. But that's a long way off, probably not in my lifetime. Meanwhile, I think we need to support, you know, that evolution. And we've already evolved dramatically from coal to natural gas, by the way. A tremendous benefit to the environment. So that's a part of it.
I think that, obviously, fossil fuel is going to die out quicker than we think it. I support transitioning us to renewable energies as we continue on this plan. I think that in the next 20 years, we should be very dependent on renewable energies. We can use solar and wind power in our current natural gas fields, and we can put those up there today if we wanted to. And a lot of the oil and gas industry is supporting renewable energies. They recognize, they're leading the charge. They recognize that this is the wave of the future. I support going to that, and then I also look at the Xcel plan of shutting down Comanche 1 and Comanche 2, leaving Comanche 3 open, and moving towards renewable energies with those two. And it's actually going to save our taxpayers money over time, as opposed to costing us more money right now.
I have one more point, Greg, and I see you shaking your head. And you mentioned cost. You know, we can't do the market and so forth. As far as I can see, my impression is that the cost, the cheap cost of coal, especially coal, there are costs which are not mentioned. Health costs that they've associated with what we have to breathe that is emitted by coal power plants. Climate change, which is a result of this sort of putting carbon into the air in tremendous amounts. These costs aren't necessarily figured into, oh, well, it costs 3 cents a day to have an electrical outlet. That doesn't include all the costs. And I kind of wonder, you know, as renewables are becoming more and more and more efficient, I wonder, is there any, in other words, are you striving as hard as you can to move from coal to renewables, or are you kind of dragging your feet because the status quo is so comfortable and beneficial to some people?
I'm probably dragging my feet because I represent, you know, a lot of jobs in the natural gas industry, primarily in Sunco.
And I think if we bring in renewable energies while in conjunction with our natural gas and our coal and our fossil fuels, we won't lose those jobs, and we'll be able to create more jobs and diversify our economy.
Well, if you talk to the people in Craig, Colorado, they wouldn't agree with that. They've already lost a lot of jobs.
I have talked to the people in Craig, Colorado, and a lot of them are telling me that they need new jobs up there, so that way when their husband or wife comes and works at the coal mine, their husband or wife has something for them to do.
Let's go to the lady back here.
Going off of the environmental points that you guys were just touching on, first question, I'd like to hear, as in a brief nutshell, both of your positions on climate change, just a real nutshell version, because I know we can go down the rabbit hole with it. That's the first one, then I'll follow up.
Okay. All right. You want to change?
Okay. So I believe climate change is real. I'm not going to deny that fact. I'm not entirely sure that it is fully man-made, but man definitely does have a part to play in it. And it has, I mean, you look at our weather this year, it's been terrible. You look at our weather over the past 5 years, it hasn't been going in a good cycle. We are in a 20-year drought, which people want to call the new normal. A drought is not normal. We need to figure out a way to fix climate change. And one of the things that Colorado should do is stay in the Paris Accord. Even as the federal government took us out, we need to stay there in Paris. And that's what Governor Hickenlooper tried to do, and I think that's the way we need to go. We need to work to protect the climate and work towards protecting our children for the future.
Well, yeah, I agree with a lot of that. I would say that I think it's kind of a mistake to relate short-term effects to long-term. I mean, climate is probably changing on the long-term. Man is contributing. We don't know how much. We don't know what we can actually do about it and whether that would be effective. I think it's kind of a mistake to relate the latest hurricane or, you know, this pattern. If we look historically, there have been a lot of cycles, you know, so we need to look as far back as we have data. But there's no question that man is contributing something. Whether we ought to be in the Paris Accords, Chinese are building a new coal-powered plant every week, one a week. So we need to be more practical about those accords. I mean, why should we sign up to something that punishes the, you know, our economy when the Chinese, others aren't? But they're making progress. The Chinese are actually working the problem as well. So I don't know. I don't have anything else to say about it. It's real. Yeah, I'm not a denier.
So then the second part is, you made a comment that we don't know what we can do about it. That's not true at all. If you look at other countries around the world and see how they are transforming everything from trash into energy to using as every use resource around them to go completely, I believe Ireland is the first country to get to a point where they do not have to rely on fossil fuels. They're all on renewable energy. So there are countries around the world that, yes, absolutely could do it. We are not, we as a nation, we're pretty big. That's going to be hard. We as a state or we as an area of a state can do that. And so my follow-up question is, A, have you recognized that? And B, what can you do, what will you do, and what will you pledge to us to protect our environment, protect our mountains, protect what we are here for and live for, so that we can hand it off better than it is now to the kids and your grandkids? And say that to yourself in the mirror. I'm handing this place off better, and I'm doing everything I can. Please.
Colin?
Oh, well, first of all, when I was in law school, one of my professors said, if you can't look yourself in the mirror every morning, you need to leave this job. Mm-hmm. And I look at myself in the morning, in the mirror every morning, and I look at myself, and I think I'm doing a pretty good job there. We do need to move forward with that. The Paris Accords is a great start. You mentioned Ireland. I also just read, and I'm not going to go into it because I haven't read very much on it, but that Iceland is looking at Colorado for geothermal energy going forward. And we might be able to do that. As Colorado, we could try to move towards geothermal. I think that as we move towards renewable energies, we can reduce our carbon footprint. We can all work together to educate each other to grow more vegetables in our gardens, move forward and try to reduce our individual carbon footprint. I look at Aspen, and they have a really good plan for the next 20 years about how they're going to go fully away from fossil fuels. That's not what I'm saying we should do at HD 57 across the board, but I just look at those ideas and I think we need to start implementing this across the state and take those ideas and see what works and move forward.
So I think some of those ideas are good. I think local leadership and example is really, really good. And so I certainly champion local gardens and you know, all of those initiatives. However, I guess what I'm really saying, I don't know what we can do, I don't know what we should spend money on. I've been on the budget committee for 4 years, and so I get a line of people telling me that teachers should make more money, that more people should be on health care, you know, and get various benefits. So my life is about priorities. So if something costs $100 million or $5 million or whatever, to me it's all about a priority. And it's all about how much difference that money will make. So when I say I don't know what we can do, I don't know what we can do that will make a difference that should have priority over education or health care or public safety or all the other things that I think about every day. So for me, I love local initiatives. That's great. But I don't know that the state should commit a lot of its resources to something that we're not confident will actually matter.
Would you like
me to defund education and pay for what? What would you like me to pay for?
Tell me
what you want me to pay for.
We've got a serious issue, and what you're doing instead of addressing it is promoting it.
Which idea would you like to advocate for that would...
That's for you guys.
Using marijuana tax dollars to give raises to teachers direct.
We did use some of that. We did use some.
How much in marijuana tax dollars did we get? And how much of it was even pushed for work for to go into teacher pockets?
Do we have any teachers in this room?
Oh, actually, teachers. You think you could answer that question?
You guys seen a raise lately?
I can answer it exactly.
I'm a former teacher. I recognize that Colorado is 11th in the country in per capita income, and we are about 43rd in teacher pay. We're one of the most expensive places to live, and we pay our teachers in the bottom percentile of what the country allows, or what the country provides. Should the state provide that? Up to a point, perhaps. I don't know, that's really the state's job. But there are other things that the state does that I'm not thrilled about. To use a very broad term, corporate welfare. I mean, the idea that any government gives money to businesses is bad.
I think I probably agree with you on that.
Okay.
And at least to pay them to come here.
And when I would say that, you mentioned that Chinese are building a coal plant every day. And that's probably... I know that they use...
Week, once a week.
I don't know if they're still doing that, but, you know, I would also suggest that while they're doing that, they are also dusting us badly in terms of creating solar factories to create solar. And I would suggest, you talk, I mean,
You talk about the jobs in the oil and gas industry, and I agree that they're there, and I agree that they're viable. That's a wonderful thing. However, we are talking about an industry that's on decline. If you want to create jobs, think about the jobs that could be created in this state, the wind and solar that's available here. And I'm not saying we eliminate oil and gas. They're a viable part of the grid, but they should be diminished over time, actively diminished, and create jobs. I mean, you talk about places like, well, if they can't dig coal, what the heck are we supposed to do? It's like, gee, I don't know. How about if you build solar panels? How about if you build, you know, alternative energy systems that can be distributed? We are a high-tech state, and yeah. We need to exploit that, just as we've exploited our natural resources, which we need to recognize that we used them, we got them, we can still use them, but we should actively be, like, slowly pushing them away, and not even slowly. Like, when I say slowly, within 20 years, oil and gas should be much smaller percentage of our energy than alternative energy. And this is just, this is the history is playing this out in front of us.
Probably will be.
And I hear you, and I agree with you that we need to move towards that. And we are. And one of the things that we need to do is when these industries leave, and like the coal industry or the oil and gas industry that left the Rifle area, When they leave, we need to be able to support the people that are there. We need to figure out ways that support them. That's why when I looked back at the REACT bill, which went through the Senate, at SB 5, I believe it was, which you voted against, it would have allowed educational training. It would have allowed for economic input and to create new jobs in the cities when a large economic factor hits the city. Causing depression.
What kind of job would that be? Waitress? What are some examples of this general statement that we need to create new jobs?
Deborah, go ahead, because I want to move on to something else here. Okay.
Well, Representative Reddick, I respect the oil and gas industry here. It's vital for my family. I appreciate a warm home and a hot shower. Okay. But I think that my question to you is, how do we get them to listen to us? Because we want better. I want better for my grandkids. So I know it's a big hog of wheels and all this money and all these wages, but we want better. And so how do we get there?
What does better mean to you? What's important in that context?
Well, I think that there's definitely, you know, I live down here in Sill, so there's definitely a lot of talk about the health issues, everything you guys have talked about here, the health issues. I personally have signed my land rights over from horizontal drilling. And so, you know, I needed the money that month, and so I did it. But I want better than that for my grandkids. I want them to have clean energy and not gas. And so, but how do we get those people to care? Because, you know, they want to make money. That's what moves them, money. So how do they make money to change?
Well, that transition from coal to gas is an economic transition that has reduced, you know, pollution by a major factor.
That's true.
There's an example.
That's true. We came to this
so we have to come up with a better idea, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But listen, the coal mine valley.
I get it. I know what you're saying.
You know, the coal. We came to this valley for the coal mine. My family is 59, and then my uncle was killed in Redstone Number 1 explosion, and so that was the beginning of the end for Mid Continent.
Wow.
And so we have transitioned, but now we need to transition some more.
You know, these sessions ought to be a lot about ideas emerging. So when we talk about, you know, that's what's better to you. What's a good idea? What would you like me to do instead of paying teachers more money? That you tell us, you know, that kind of stuff.
Okay, that's very good. That's all right, now I want to get back. Let's move on, because I want to look at having positions about education is